Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us this evening. Once again, we have some great guests on this evening's programs lined up for you. So let's get to our first guest leading off the program, the co-host of the new morning show, Cooley and Kevin in the Morning on ESPN Radio 980 AM, Mr. Kevin Sheehan. Kevin, welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. I want to get your thoughts on a number of Washington-related sports issues leading off our program tonight. First of all, thoughts on the Washington Redskins and the draft. Josh Dotson with their number one pick. I saw in a lot of the mock drafts he was picked more of the second-round pick, but I was very high on him. And since Washington made that selection, I think a lot of people are saying, hey, the Redskins might have gotten the best available wide receiver in the draft. But first of all, what's your thoughts on the Redskins' number one pick?
Well, I loved it. I'm not sure. Most of the mock drafts I saw were him going anywhere from 10 overall to 20 something overall. And the Redskins had him ranked as the 11th best player in the draft. And what he is, and I actually have some familiarity with him because I have a son at TCU in Fort Worth. So I've watched almost every single TCU game over the last couple of years. And he's just been a dominant wide receiver with phenomenal hands, great size, and the kind of ball skills that you sort of think of when you think of guys like Larry Fitzgerald or A.J. Green in today's game or Chris Carter from, you know, way back in the day. And as my good friend Doc Walker said the night we were doing a draft, so we just compared him to two Hall of Famers potentially and maybe a future one. A future third, and I said, he's got that kind of talent. He's got elite sort of pass-catching skills, and I know a lot of Redskins fans weren't totally convinced that, you know, they'd go wide receiver or they needed wide receiver, but this guy was too good to pass up.
Mm-hmm. It seemed overall, as far as their draft selections, they did a nice job of mixing needs or areas where they needed to add some depth, and also finding the best available player. I know Fuller has some injury issues coming off the knee surgery, but overall, what were your thoughts overall on how they drafted this year?
You know, I think it's one of those things where you can never really judge a draft until 2 to 3 years after it. Mm-hmm. But at this point through two seasons, I think there's a lot of trust in Scott McLuhan, their general manager. They really haven't had in the organization in a long, long time, a true talent evaluator as someone that's what he does. I mean, he comes with the resume. He is a guy that understands not only talent, but understands culture and fit within an organization. He likes to say, and we sort of make fun of him, I'm just looking for football players. But he looks for guys that love the game, that have a certain toughness and competitiveness to them. And there's no doubt if you watch the film and the tape on Cravens, he fits that mold. Doxson fits that mold. The guy Ioannidis they drafted from Temple in the fifth round really fits that mold. And maybe more than any player that they drafted, Steven Daniels, the inside linebacker from Boston College, they picked him in the seventh round, is probably the most competitive, physical, tough guy that they drafted. He was incredibly undersized, which is why he wasn't drafted earlier, but he played on arguably a top five defensive team in the country, even though Boston College was horrendous on offense. But this guy really, you know, was a producer, and he really sort of personifies what McLuhan's looking for, you know, overachieving, tough guys that love football, and that's what they got in Steven Daniels.
Last August and early September, we had a couple different people on from the Washington area. Opinion of Kirk Cousins was that he was not going to be the franchise quarterback. The expectations were, at best, he's a mediocre quarterback. Maybe he'll look to next year. Obviously, Kirk Cousins fooled a lot of people and had an amazing year stepping up. How comfortable are you and how confident are you that he can move forward, repeat that success, and continue to be that guy, the franchise quarterback?
Well, I mean, I'm very confident. For a couple of reasons. Number one, I mean, it wasn't just that he had a good season last year. He had a record-setting season. He had arguably a top 3 to 4 all-time franchise quarterbacking season. He set 4 records, franchise records last year, and he did so without a running game and without a very good defense. And on top of that, here's a guy that didn't take his first team rep until late in training camp and late in the preseason. So he didn't have the benefit of working with the number ones and working as the number one quarterback in the organization for an entire offseason. So I think there's a lot that sort of would say intuitively and logically that he would improve, that he wouldn't regress. Now, some will point to the fact that he didn't beat a really good team last year and that they've got a first-place schedule this year. And I would just say to that, look, you know, he had games against teams that you can call them, you know, teams that weren't playoff teams or teams that weren't very good. But this guy had, you know, a perfect quarterback rating in the season, you know, once and nearly three times down the stretch. He didn't have a passer rating under 100 in his last five games and in six of his last seven games. I just thought that he really got confident and really got comfortable. And what we saw over the last half of the season, and in particular over the last quarter of the season, is more of what you're going to see this year. And again, you give him a running game and you give him a defense, and hopefully they've improved in those areas, there's the potential to be even better.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned improvement. They of course, made a great signing, signing cornerback Josh Norman. They extended tight end Jordan Reed to a five-year extension. It seems like the Redskins are doing everything right in terms of the front office offseason moves. What are your thoughts overall on what to expect in the rookie mini camps coming up? And has there been anything they've done wrong, or is there any need or anything you thought that they could have done a little bit differently this offseason?
I mean, I think that the Norman contract, I mean, is a risk. You know, they have not, in the last several years, sort of reverted at any point to what they used to do, which was pay the biggest, you know, free agent contracts to aging stars with sort of brand names. Now, that isn't what Josh Norman is. He's a player entering his prime, but boy, they gave him big time money. I mean, you know, he's the highest paid corner in the league, and that's sort of what they used to do. Now, I think most Redskin fans, and I sort of am in this boat, sort of believe that McLuhan wouldn't do this unless it was the perfect fit. And we know that it's a need area at corner. But that's the riskiest thing they've done in this offseason, and certainly could blow up in their face at some point. And that's a big salary cap, you know, space taker upper over the next couple of years. I think the thing that's going to be really interesting, they're really excited about Junior Gallette and re-signing him. They think he would have been a major impact pass-rushing guy on their defense last year had he not blown out his Achilles, and they're expecting big things from him. Mm-hmm. The Jordan Reed extension is great. He is arguably their best player. The key with him is he's got to be available. He's got to be healthy, which means there's some risk to that deal. But overall, I think they've had a really good offseason. You combine that with the draft, and, you know, I think they've improved themselves. Time will tell, but it looks like they're doing things in a way that is responsible at the very least, which we know for a decade they were irresponsible when it came to managing their roster.
Yeah, it is refreshing. Our special leadoff guest is Kevin Sheehan, co-host of the new Cooley and Kevin Morning Show on ESPN Radio 980. Just wanted to pick your brain on a couple other Washington pro sports issues. The Capitals, I thought they had a great regular season with the exception of maybe a period or two. They looked incredible against the Flyers in round one, but once again, a disappointing end in round two. They fought hard in game six to bounce back. But obviously, a lot of disappointment concerning the Capitals right now. Your thoughts on what went wrong against the Penguins in the second round?
Well, I think the Penguins were better. I mean, you know, a lot of Caps fans will say same old Caps, and they choked or they collapsed, or, you know, I don't think it was that this time. It's been that in recent years. I don't think that was it this year. I think they got beat by the better team. I mean, it was. I'm a casual hockey fan, not a hardcore hockey fan, but one of the things I thought it was sort of obvious to any sports fan and casual hockey fan is that Pittsburgh was just faster. You know, they just had better skaters and more skilled skaters, and the Caps just never seemed to keep up with that pace. And it was a series that was closely contested. You know, Holtby was very good as he had been all year, but he wasn't great the entire time. And the other guy, the rookie, probably had a better series than Holtby, and that was a bit of a surprise. But it's a shame because there are hardcore Cap fans in D.C. that have just waited for that Ovechkin-era team to go beyond the second round. It hasn't happened, and you just wonder if it ever will.
And I also wanted to get your thoughts on the Nationals, who made some news in a couple different ways this week. Of course, you were talking about on your show this week. How surprised were you that they signed Steven Strasburg to an extension, considering there was virtually nothing about this in spring training, nothing about it during the first week of the season, and then all of a sudden this mega deal comes out earlier this week?
Shocked. No one that tells you that they knew it was coming is telling you the truth. This was a shock to everybody in this town, in part because Boris never lets his players do anything but get the free agency.
Yeah.
Where Strasburg would have been, you know, the prized free agent, and there would have been a bidding war like you read about. But the other thing really that I think surprised most, you know, people up here is that Strasburg never gave any indication that he liked it here. You know, he seemed to complain a bit about the cold weather in April or the cold weather in October. He's a Southern California kid. He loves that weather and feels more comfortable pitching in warm weather, and, you know, he's injured all the time, and there's just nothing that gave you any sort of indication that D.C. is a place that he loved. So the surprise was not only that he signed, but that he and his wife said how much they loved it here. And the truth is, D.C. is a great place to live and a great place to raise a family, but you never got the sense from him that he felt that way. And the flip side to that is we've always gotten this sense from Harper that he loves Washington.
Yeah.
But will he end up being here when he becomes a free agent? Who knows? But it was a pleasant surprise for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned Scott Boras, of course, and Bryce Harper. That is the $1 million, or in this case, multi-million-dollar question. Do they try to strike early with Bryce Harper? Does Scott Boras, you know, he teased, of course, in quotes this week that, well, you know, it's up to the learners. If they want to make a deal, we're willing to talk. But you're talking to some reports have maybe as much as $400 million contract. What are your thoughts on going forward? Obviously, Bryce Harper is one of a handful of dynamic players in all the sports right now, but you're talking some major dollars coming up here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I heard Boris the other day on our station talk about you know, basically the economic conditions of the marketplace will dictate the next contract, but that a $500 million deal is not out of the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. Here's what we do know about the Nationals and their owners. The narrative early on was that the Learners don't spend money, but then they spent a big money on Jason Worth, and they spent a massive amount of money on Max Scherzer last year. So they've proven, and now another big deal for Strasburg. I think they've got four $100 million players under contract right now. So I wouldn't put it past them to, you know, to do what it takes to keep Harper here. They're among the wealthiest owners in sports. They have the ability to do it, and Harper is a true superstar, and maybe in this town, the best player to ever play in his individual sport. I don't know that they've ever had that in football. I don't think they've ever had that in basketball. I mean, you could argue Ovechkin's been the best player in the sport, but he hasn't done it with respect to winning in the postseason. If Harper takes this team to, you know, a World Series and wins another MVP, I mean, this is the greatest team sport athlete in this town's history. So the town will be behind whatever the Learners pay to keep him here.
Yeah. Before we let you go, I know you and Chris Cooley have been good friends for quite a while. You just started doing that morning show together, and the back and forth you guys have is just awesome, listening to you in the morning. What's it like working with Chris, and can you give us a little preview of what's coming up on your show over the next couple of days?
Well, he's insane, for starters, but we all love him. You know, he came to the station 3 years ago, and we all knew him anyway as a Redskin, and he's just fit in from day one. He's a great guy. He's extremely smart. Like Cooley, most people don't know. They just see this guy that's a little bit nuts in sort of the same way Riggo, you know, back in the day was. But like Riggo, he's incredibly intelligent, fun, smart, great guy to hang out with, and we're having a good time doing the morning show. And you know, coming up, I haven't even looked at the rundown for tomorrow or Monday, but we've been talking a lot about the Nats recently, and we do a lot of Redskins on our show every day too. We have two segments built in: Redskins at 8 a.m. and Redskins at 10 a.m. So you're guaranteed to hear some Redskins every day, even in the off season. So we've just had a good time doing it so far.
Yeah, it's a fun show, a lot of great information. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Our pleasure. Kevin Sheehan, the co-host of the new morning show, Cooley and Kevin in the Morning, ESPN Radio 980, down in the Washington, D.C. and DMV region. Time for our first time out of the evening and our first feature. And one of the hottest players in the Phillies minor league system is a player who was outrighted off the organization's 40-man roster this winter. Now, former catcher Tommy Joseph, the lone survivor of the Hunter Pence trade, is pushing for a call-up to the majors. Sports Talk cameras caught to Joseph to talk about his spring so far and ask him about his transition to becoming a first baseman.
After last season and everything that happened, it was nice to start fresh, start new, and really enjoyed it. I don't think an adjustment to a new position is ever smooth. So we've hit some bumps and stuff, and a lot of it's a learning curve and understanding different things over there, and you know, getting reads off the bat. But I've enjoyed it. There's been a lot of good people around me that have helped me, and I'm excited to continue. We're making strides in the right direction. I don't think I've played the position long enough to be like, yeah, I feel comfortable. I can take on anything. That's definitely mentally how I'm going to feel here shortly. Good. I feel real good. I fine-tuned, a couple things with the swing, and really just trying to concentrate on keeping a solid approach and, mentally stay strong throughout, at a bat or a game in the season.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Time to look at tonight's trivia question. We go to Major League Baseball this week. Who has the most at-bats in Major League Baseball history? Just need the correct name of the owner of the most at-bats in MLB history. Here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Hey, let's welcome in our special in-studio guests here. We have the sports director of the RCN Empire, Mr. Gary Laubach. His grandson and Lafayette assistant sports information director, Brian Ludroff, is here. And last, and quite honestly, least among this panel tonight here, we have the man who inspired Sam Bradford to develop some maturity and do the right thing and show up to camp.
Yep.
Mr. Joseph.
After we let him have it.
Wait, what did you say last week? Multiple times?
Do you have it on there?
Of course.
Guys, grow up. Grow up, I said.
We heard you.
And he listened, and he finally grew up.
I
want to give you one other. All right. I want to give you one compliment here.
Grow up.
It was nice. It was nice tonight.
We're just doing it the number of times you said
on the
last show.
It was nice tonight that you actually. It was nice tonight that you actually introduced me.
Well, don't push it. We have some big guests here. Come on, let's get to this.
Okay, I'm ready.
I got a lot of sports topics too that I want to ask these guys about. But Brian, though, there's a great dynamic here. You have one of the most recognizable grandfathers in this whole Eastern Pennsylvania region. So, first of all, I just want to ask you, what was it like growing up with Gary as your grandfather?
Oh, I mean,
Now, you can be honest.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm aware.
Remember the will.
Yes, exactly. I've been told. I've been briefed.
It's pretty good.
No, honestly, it's what you would think it would be. It's everywhere you go, he knows somebody. He's walking through crowds at football games. And, I've worked with him. I did spotting for him when I was 12 or 13. I've literally grown up with him. And it's cool. you know, I know his head won't be able to get through the door, but he was young. I mean, it was cool to be able to go out and play catch with my grandfather. Not a lot of people have that opportunity when they're young,
you know, as a kid. The key word there was was.
Yeah, exactly.
You're interrupting him again.
I know, I'm sorry.
One question in.
But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's funny. I have to talk to people. I say, you know, Gary's doing this or Gary's doing that, and then, you know, then they recognize who he is, and like, oh, it's my grandfather. They're like, wait, that's your grandfather? I mean, everybody knows him, and then associates, you know, me with him. So,
now you started working for him, as you said, when you were 12.
Right.
So, what came first? Was it that passion for sports, or did Gary want to hire cheap labor and have you there?
Well,
you know,
it's definitely that. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the underwriting tone of all of it. Now, honestly, I've always been a sports guy. My dad, you know, got me into sports when I was a little kid, and then I started. You know, he gave me an opportunity to come and work some football games and make some money when you're 12, 13 years old, and you can make some money and go buy some things for yourself. It's great. But my passion for athletics came straight from that. I mean, you know, I don't think I would be what I'm doing right now. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be the person I am without him. Yeah, I mean, all the sports type of lifestyle and majoring in sport management in college and doing what, you know, Sports Info now, that all started working those high school games.
Gary, what was it like for you to have him working alongside of you and then to see him, you know, have success in this industry?
Well, I appreciate everything that Brian said, but Brian always was a very intelligent young man, so I had no doubts that when I asked him to be my spotter that he would be terrific, but he actually was better than I thought he would be because, as you know, Chris, we kind of keep our own stats during the game, unlike the big boys who have people to do it all for them.
Joe do it one time. He was horrible.
It's not easy to find somebody that really can do it well. Well, it turned out after about half a season, Brian was able to do all the spotting and all the stats. I didn't have to do any when he was there. He took over that entire job, and I actually hated to see him go off to college. I was doing my best to maybe have him get some bad grades and not go to school. I could just keep him forever. But, obviously I'm very proud of him and what he has become, and he's worked hard to do it. And whatever little influence I had has been good. You know, I'm not sure I wanted him to get into this field in particular. But he's a great young man. I'm proud of him.
And Brian, you mentioned sports management. That whole industry, as far as sports information, has just blossomed. I mean, there's college programs all over the country.
Absolutely.
And it's a very competitive field now. It's not like you have one or two people, you know someone you're in. Now there's people graduating from schools all over the place, and there's only a finite number of jobs.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's one of those gigs where you can't, you know, say I'll move to New York and I'll find a job. You know, you go wherever that you know something opens up. It's a very high demand. I'm lucky that I was able to, you know, get in with them when I could and meet the Lafayette guys. I mean, Scott Morris and Phil Labella, my two bosses, our sports information director and our director of athletic communications and promotions. I've known them since I was 14 or 15 years old. And there's no two guys better to work for than those guys. So, you know, I think I lucked into a really good situation where I am now. But it's definitely, I mean, anybody that's looking to getting into sports like that, it's all about experience. I mean, take as many internships as you can because, it's the type of field where the experience is much more important than the book stuff or the classroom things. Mm-hmm. You learn everything you do on the job.
Now, you mentioned Lafayette Sports Network, which has taken off over the last decade or more now. During the broadcast, who's in charge? I mean, you work for Lafayette, and Gary's a play-by-play guy. Do you butt heads at all? Is there ever a time where you can say, you do this, or, you know, Gary, do you listen to Brian, any instructions he gives you?
Well, I'm pretty demanding, actually, in getting the information and getting the notes in advance. Mm-hmm. So we have that understanding. I mean, he knows when I want them and when I need them, and he gets them to me. And every now and then I find a grammatical mistake. Being an English teacher, I'll give him a call and say, you know, this is a plural verb when it should be a singular verb. Things of that nature, but that's all in good kidding and joshing. But I have never, I mean, in all honesty, I probably had a great deal to do with Brian getting his internship at Lafayette College. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But again, they knew him. They knew what he was like. But I had nothing to do with them calling him back. He had left Lafayette, and he had gone to Lebanon Valley. So he earned that all on his own. And obviously now, after a couple of years utilizing him as I need to do when I do a Lafayette game, he's in charge of basketball. He's done a great job.
Yeah, you didn't answer my question though, as far as football, Brian. Brian, you know, what's it like working for your grandfather during the broadcast?
It's fun, honestly. You know, when I was young, it was great just to be able to hang out. Yeah. But you know, we go to high school games. He gives me two hot dogs, and I'm happy. You know what I mean? So that's the best part of the night when I was 14, 15 years old. but yeah, you talk about game notes. It's funny. He had probably a basketball game around January 2nd, January 3rd, and I made sure I wrapped up the game notes for him for Christmas, a week in advance.
Yeah. He's learned.
Do you ever have any situations where you don't agree with a particular thing, and how does that work, or hasn't that really been an
issue? There's situations, but I think we've grown. It's funny. It's a much more friendly relationship than necessarily, you know, maybe is common with a grandson, grandfather. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much more peer like. Mm-hmm. I guess
my only disagreement with Brian has been his living conditions over the years. You know, when I came out of college and had a full time teaching job, I never lived like he had to live as an intern, as a college student. I mean, his first college room, if he put his arms out, he touched both sides of the wall. I couldn't believe anybody.
But part of that reaction is probably a grandfather.
Yes, it exactly. Definitely is. I just didn't want to see him live like that. But he didn't seem to have any problems with it.
So. Yeah, it was. You know, I went to University of Delaware, and the freshman dorms we had there were 8 feet by 8 feet. It was the economy single, they called it. Yeah. You know, it was the length of the bed.
Joe's yacht is bigger than that.
It was one
My
of these.
My fishing boat is bigger than that.
It was one of these. You gotta step to the chair, to the dresser, to get up on top of the bed to go to sleep at night. And, but everybody went through it, and you know, better for it.
Could you talk about your role now at Lafayette? And I know there's been a lot of highlights over the course of the last year. What have been some of the best big moments this past year?
Yeah. So I cover a couple sports in each season. Mm-hmm. In the fall, I'm the soccer guy as well. You know, everybody works on football. In the winter, I'm with men's basketball, and then in the spring, men's and women's lacrosse, as well as men's and women's tennis. And something I picked up this year was social media manager as well. So, and that's I think I've really taken hold of, and I really enjoy doing that. But you know, this year's been tough in terms of wins and losses for us. But when I think of highlights, I mean, my first year full time was 2 years ago. We had 150 Lafayette Lehigh 150th game at Yankee Stadium, won by 20. Ross Sherman had an unbelievable game, and I was the social media guy for it and putting stuff on the video board and stuff. So that was really, really cool. And then my first year with Lafayette men's basketball, they go and win a Patriot League championship. Mm-hmm. So I think I was spoiled a little bit that first year. But I think that, you know, without talking too much about wins and losses, I think the kids at Lafayette are what make it the best place to be. I mean, I never, ever have to worry about somebody saying the wrong thing in an interview or not showing up for a meeting with someone. I mean, these kids are on top of it. They're smart. They're involved in everything. They're easy to talk to. They're, you know, easy to work with. So can't say enough about the student athletes at Lafayette.
I guess one of the big stories right now is that no contact during the spring practices. Right. I want to get your thoughts on both of that, because that's obviously a big change this year.
Well, I had a chance to go to a number of practices and talk to Frank about that, because it is different when you walk on the field and you see no one has shoulder pads on for the most part. They have some kind of padding in their shoulders, but for the most part they don't. But I'll tell you what, those practices were as difficult as any practice I've ever watched in football. And if you were injured, Frank likes to call it not like a cell block, but some jail term. You're in the yard. You're in the yard. That's what he calls it. Well, I'll tell you what, that would keep you from getting injured, because those guys work harder physically than anybody out on the field. And I asked Frank about it. Do you like it? He said, look, this is all about skill and drill. Last year, I got 40 players who ended up being somehow injured in spring practice.
Yeah.
This year, it was in single digits. And I saw people working so hard. What he wanted to do was simplify everything, work on things in little bits and pieces. And then they put them all together, and in all honesty, the Leopards look pretty darn good in the spring.
Another thing you don't necessarily think of when you're talking about, you know, full pad practices is the other portion of it, the getting in the training room or the conditioning or the lifting portion of it.
Sure.
And the less stress necessarily on the body with less contact in practices allows for a more consistent lifting schedule and allowing, you know, you don't need as much time to recover. And so in that way, they're getting bigger, stronger, faster, but they're also honing techniques as well.
I think initially when you know, it came out across the country that a lot of schools were not going to have contact drills, a lot of the old school people were like, well, football is all about hitting. You got to get out there and hit. But when you look at the numbers and you look at the people that get injured at the college level and the pro level in these off-season workouts, it really, I think, is a really smart decision for both the professional and the college levels to do.
Well, I think it certainly is a move in the right direction in a lot of cases. I think there is also another side in spring ball in the sense that if you have no idea what kind of talent you have and you have, you know, you don't know if you've lost an awful lot of seniors and you don't know who the hitters are and who the guys that aren't going to shy away from catching a ball in traffic, then spring ball, the contact is probably good to have at least some contact. But if you have a ball club that's, you know who's who and you know what's what, then I think the timing and all of that kind of thing with the notepads is a great idea.
My take on that is everybody that's there in the springtime has played a year already, at the very least a year. Yeah. So you do know those particular players. When the freshmen come back out now and start practicing in the summertime, there'll be some hitting, no question about it. And I think hitting becomes a little more necessary now because I think what we're finding out is kids can't tackle the way they used to. So that needs to be worked on, Joe.
Well, I think also, even though you may have had them in the fall, as part of the season, you still always have a few question marks. Guys that you didn't get enough time with, that you didn't see in game situations, and that's why in the spring, in some of those situations, I think it's good. But I think overall it's a good move, and it does protect kids and keeps the legs a lot fresher, and so that, you know, you're coming in without any big injuries in the summer. And it also gives the kids a better chance to now work out in the summer because they're healthy.
Right.
And they
don't
have to waste time in the summer trying to recoup from an injury from the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Or from the spring.
I think one of the early words, too, about the Lafayette football program coming up this fall is that a lot of playmakers, a lot of speed, a lot more depth on the offensive line. Could you talk a little bit about the offense and some of the changes that will be taking place?
Well, I think everybody's excited to see a guy like Matt Mrazek come back, you know, a big wide receiver that, you know, had a great freshman year and showed signs beginnings of last year to really be an all-league type guy, and then unfortunately broke his collarbone toward the end of the season. But, you know, to see a guy that can just go up above the defense and get a ball, I think is huge. And then, you know, there's a lot of guys that Lafayette's really looking at to take a next step. I mean, Joey Chenoweth is one of those burner guys that can play in the slot, and C.J. Emil, you didn't see a whole lot of him. But I think we'll see much more of him this year working out of the slot.
And Deshaun Brown, obviously, last year's running back, he got bigger, he's stronger, he's faster. So he will, I think, step right into the tailback position, which is extremely important for Frank's offense. Yeah. And Kyle Mayfield, I think they're thinking about putting a fullback back in there again, a guy that can play fullback, catch the ball out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. And Emil will be a great guy to catch the ball out of the backfield and make people miss. So Joey Chenoweth, Dylan Wadsworth may be the guy to watch because he is a big tight end who really, really is athletic. He was so impressive last year. He's a great blocker, but he's also a terrific tight end receiver.
Go ahead, Brian.
I just think everything hinges on the line.
I think
there were so many issues with the injuries. I think if they can just stay healthy, because I know Lafayette's offense, they want to spread out, they want to pass the ball, but it's all on
And those numbers are going to help, too, this year to have some more numbers.
But they,
our special in-studio guests, RCN Sports Director and a voice of the Lafayette Sports Network, Gary Laubach, Brian Ludroff, Lafayette Assistant Sports Information Director. We're going to be talking some more topics coming up in just a little bit. Right now, it's time for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. This is where our panelists identify someone or a group of people in the world of sports for doing something either really good or something not so good. Joe, we'll start with you.
I'm going to give a thumbs up to Liberty High School's Hall of Fame inductees, Sports Hall of Fame, which was held last Saturday. Congratulations to a lot of great people that I knew and played when I was there and a number of others. But specifically, I do want to mention Bill Ruth, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame, longtime track and cross-country coach at Liberty, who went through open-heart surgery down at Baylor University 2 weeks ago. 10 days after his surgery, they allowed him to fly home to be there for the ceremony. Very happy for that. And a thumbs, one other quick thumb up. Tony Filo was inducted, longtime basketball star back at Liberty back in the early 60s. Great guy, and going through some real health issues right now. I was happy to see that he got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
All right, Brian, how about you?
I'm going to give my thumbs up to Matt Smalley. Matt Smalley is a cornerback for Lafayette, just inked a 3-year deal with the New York Giants. Mm-hmm. So we're all really excited about him. He's a great guy, and we're really happy for him over at Lafayette.
All right, Gary?
I have two thumbs up. This will be the 20th year for the Lafayette Sports Network. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thumbs up, 20 years now of working with the Lafayette program. RCN should be very proud of that. Mm-hmm. You don't stay on for 20 years if you don't do a good job. So big thumbs up to that. My other thumbs up is even bigger. Most people don't know that tonight is Chris and Joe's 500th program. 500 shows they have done together. A tremendous accolade because this show just continues to get better and better and better. And I congratulate both Joe and Chris. That's a job well done. Big thumbs up.
Thank you, Gary.
That was supposed to be a surprise for our last segment, but
very nice. Hey, by the way, he's the boss in the sports show.
Yeah, that's why I'm all right with it. So.
I'll give you another one at the end of the show.
All right, and a thumbs up for me, the Bangor baseball team. They are a perfect 20-0 with the playoffs coming up, about to run the table, or don't want to jinx them, but right now 20-0. We were out to try to cover them the other day, and the surprise there was wet field conditions, so even though our cameras were there, we couldn't interview the Slaters, but did want to recognize them and give them a thumbs up for doing an outstanding job so far this year with hopefully more to come. And speaking of more to come, we'll be back with more of RCN Sports Talk in just a moment.
Chance to interact with us. Call, email, or tweet us your sports comments, questions, and opinions. We want to hear from you right now. And now, here's more RCN Sports Talk.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guest, Brian Ludroff, Lafayette Assistant Sports Information Director, Gary Laubach, RCN Sports Director. Joe Craig is here
and
as
me,
well.
And the other guy.
Of course, coming up next week, weather permitting, baseball playoffs will start. EPC semifinals start on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a wild season for both baseball and softball, with a very competitive fall, or a very competitive spring when they get the games in. But you're going to be broadcasting the games starting Tuesday and Wednesday in the EPC. So your thoughts? I know everything's kind of up in the air right now, so you really can't even figure out who would possibly be in the playoffs right
now. No, the quarterfinals are actually being played on Saturday if everything, I guess, somehow comes together. Hopefully we won't have rain tomorrow. I don't know how many games are still on the ledger for tomorrow. Tomorrow, there weren't supposed to be any tomorrow. We're still kind of waiting to see who the teams will be, but we will have on Tuesday and Wednesday, weather permitting, the semifinals and finals from Hackett's Park in Easton. So. Looking forward to that. They'll be live on Tuesday. They'll be coming on around 4 o'clock, and the championship final will be on at 7.
Yeah. And, Brian, I know finals, I guess, where are you at in terms of the school year for Lafayette, and what do you
do? This is finals week right now. So the kids are probably in the library for most of the day. Mm-hmm. they finish up on, I guess, tomorrow. And then senior week next week and graduation next Saturday. So goes by like that.
All right. They have a really neat evening too next Thursday night. Mm-hmm. They have Anybody that knows about the ESPYs, where they give out awards and things to the athletes, the national athletes, they have the Pardees, the capital P-A-R-D for leopards. The Pardees. It's a really fun night with parents and senior athletes, and that's next Thursday night.
All right. Sounds good. All right, time for the roundtable. The roundtable is where we have a variety of local and national sports topics. Our special guests don't know what's coming prior to their arrival here at the studio, but always looking for an entertaining exchange of thoughts and opinions on some different issues. All right, topic number one, we talked about it briefly in our first segment. Bryce Harper, some reports have him possibly signing a $400 million contract next year. Kevin Sheehan from ESPN Radio down in D.C. said could be as high as $500 million. Brian, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Bryce Harper, one of the best players, one of the best athletes in sports, but possibly signing a $500 million contract?
No chance. If I'm the GM, no chance at all. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, it's especially in the sport of baseball, one player can't do that much for you. That's in my opinion. Unless we get to a world where the market is, you know, you're not getting a Bryce Harper without paying $400 or $500 million. I mean, I don't think he's levels ahead of the, you know, $100 or $200 million, which is crazy to even say.
Yeah.
That there's levels there, but I don't see it.
Harry?
Well, I don't see it as being maybe the right thing to do. But Giancarlo Stanton gets $325 million right now,
yeah.
The Miami Slugger. I can pretty much guarantee you Bryce Harper will get $400 million.
Wow. And Joe?
Only Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Ted Williams are worth $400 million.
Yeah. Joe, they're not playing
anymore.
All
right, Bryce is a great player. He will get probably $400 million. Nobody, that's obscene in this country today with people that don't have enough food on the table. Sorry.
Right. We're going to have more roundtable topics coming up after this break. Quick plug, though, coming up in just a couple of weeks, our first of four Sports Talk Gets Wild shows, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings. Our first show will be Thursday, May 26th. One of the great things about this is we're doing all these events to benefit local charities. The May 26th event will be to benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Our special guests will be Sue Butz-Staven, the head coach of the Emmaus field hockey team, and all of her players coming off another state championship performance. So more information is there on the website. Check out rcnsports.getswild. Four shows coming up this summer and benefit some great local charities. You can come on out, see the guests in person, and boo at Joe and myself if you want. Speaking of booing at Joe, it's time for Joe's favorite part of the show. Actually, we're going to skip that because we're running short on time. So we'll hold that over till next week.
Oh, and I have a good
coming
one.
Up, the weather did actually cooperate later this week and allowed the Colonial League Track and Field Championships to be held. Our Sports Talk cameras were on the scene to get interviews and highlights, which included a few record-breaking performances.
It's a great atmosphere. I love every second of it because everyone's here to compete and win. And the noise, then the excitement here is just amazing.
There's a lot of competition out here, a lot of good other runners, and it's like I just enjoy running against other runners. It pushes me just like I push them.
We had some pretty good competition. We all knew that we wanted to come out here and do the best we can do. And I think that we all tried our best and just put it all out there.
I thought it was a really like hard race. It was really close, but I'm really happy and excited that we won. We were able to pull it off.
It was not as easy as I thought. I ran the 110s, then the 100 back and forth, but I just did what I could, and it was just fun to compete out here.
I had the league record at 18.5 and a half last year, and I broke that by a quarter of an inch this year, so I wanted to come out and break the record. I was hoping it would have been by a little more than that, but I'm happy.
I was a little nervous coming in, a little skeptical. I didn't think I was going to do this good, so I'm really happy about today.
I think the season overall has been pretty good. We still have districts. I'm hoping to peak there. I think we're all hoping to peak there.
We're just going to treat it like this meet. I think they're both really great competition, great way to push ourselves. So we're really excited. We're ready to do well in this one. And once we're done with that, move on to the next one, do well in that.
Final segment of RCN Sports Talk. Quick reminder of tonight's trivia question. Who has the most at-bats in Major League Baseball history? It is a recognizable name. Don't forget, if you're watching us on replay or listening to our podcast or watching us on video on demand, you can email the correct answer to us, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. And again, if you can include your mailing address, we'll mail out the certificate to you. Multiple answers, correct answers. We'll have a drawing on next week's show. So who has the most at-bats in MLB history? Email the answer to us, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Our final moments with Gary Laubach and Brian Ludroff. Topic number two, the Raiders supposedly are set to move the franchise again.
Yet again.
This time to Las Vegas. Gary, you spent a lot of time out in Las Vegas.
So I do.
Your thoughts on the Raiders moving to Vegas?
Well, when I go to Vegas, the one thing I've always missed is a good NFL game. It's the one thing I always wanted to do when I was in Vegas.
All the stories you bring back, I haven't heard of them.
Takes you away from the table.
Well, you know, Las Vegas is a small market. It's not a big city market. And I think people go to there to gamble, and I don't think the NFL likes at least to be associated with gambling, even though there's so much gambling involved in pro football. I don't think it's a good move. I don't think it's a good move for Oakland, and I think it might be a ploy just to get back to L.A. if San Diego stays where they're going.
All right. Brian, how about you?
Yeah, just echoing off of that, I think a lot of this hinges on the Chargers, right, whether they're going to stay in San Diego or go to L.A. I don't see it. I don't. But if there's any franchise that will fit in Vegas, it's the Raiders, right? Yeah.
Better for worse. So. Joe, how about you?
Awful.
Why are you grousing?
Awful. You got one of the most loyal fan bases. The Oakland Raiders fans are among the best in the world.
They should be used to this.
And no, it's not fair to those people to use them.
They just
in
go
any
for
way.
A few years, they come
like,
back.
It's just not right. It was bad when they moved to L.A. I mean, it. Almost now to be in Vegas. Are you kidding me?
All right. Topic number three, your yes-no question. Should and will Carson Wentz play three or more games this year? The Vegas line, by the way, is 3.5 games, 3.5 games. So I don't know where you feel about that. Joe, we'll start with you.
Should he? No. I think he needs to learn, and I think he's got a vast amount he can learn by sitting there and doing the things he has to do at practice. Will he? Probably because Bradford is an injury-prone guy, and I would expect by week 7 or 8 or 9, the backup will be Wentz and not the other guy. So
well, thank I you think, for your inspirational speech last week to bring Bradford back.
I told him, so, grow up, I said, I and he did, and he grew up.
All right. Brian?
Happy year. I'm waiting for the sound.
I'm the same way. Should he? No, I don't think so. Will he? Probably. I think, you know, knowing the Eagles franchise, knowing how Sam Bradford probably has a short leash, I think he'll probably get in there. But I think it's pretty proven that, sitting a year or two behind a veteran starter and learning the system, I'm a Packers fan, so, I watched Aaron Rodgers sit under Brett Favre, and it worked out pretty well for them. So, should he? I don't think so, but, yeah, he probably will.
All right, Gary?
I'm surprised to hear him say that. He's a Delaware guy. Joe Flacco started right away when he came out of Delaware.
That's true.
So
I don't
think he will play a game.
Oh, okay.
Unless injury. I mean, injury, obviously, to get him in there. But I see Chase Daniels as being the backup. I don't see him getting in to play again.
I agree with you. That's what I said. It's an injury, maybe. And I think there will be an
injury. Are you flip-flopping again?
No.
I said Bradford has been injury-prone,
and I think that he will play.
All right. Topic number four, probably the most successful show on ESPN, First Take with Stephen A. Smith, is going to lose his partner. Skip Bayless is leaving for Fox. So who should take over this prize sports position? Gary, we'll start this one with you.
Well, since I don't like the show, because I don't like Stephen A. Smith. I think Jim Rome, because that'll give me two reasons not to watch it. So that's my pick, Jim Rome.
It'd be interesting to see who slugs the other one first.
That's right. I'd watch the fight.
Yep. Brian?
I think you can replace him with a dummy, a brick wall, because I'm pretty sure Stephen A. can argue with himself. So.
All right. And Joe, besides yourself, who should replace
Skip Bayless? I think Angelo Cataldi would be a perfect guy to be there because, boy, I could see him. I mean, with his nonsense, it would be interesting to watch, I think.
I thought you were going
to... I know. You thought I was going to say something.
All right. Topic
else.
Number five. What's one rule change you'd like to see football adapt? Brian, we'll start with you.
I would love to see the NFL adapt college football overtime. I think college football overtime is the coolest thing, one of the coolest things in sports. I think it gives both sides the equal chance. I realize it's a situational thing, but I think college football overtime needs to move to the pros.
That is a good one. Gary?
I don't like the way the NFL is getting dirtier and dirtier. Two personal fouls in one game, make it reviewable to make sure it's the right call, throw them out of the game.
Yeah. All right, and Joe, one rule change.
Stop kicking the ball on kickoffs out of the end zone. Everything. You're taking away the one of the most exciting things in football was run backs. Put the darn ball back on the 30-yard line or wherever and kick the ball so you get some returns. I hate that.
You going to say something about offensive line?
I was a couple like you, so I'll only mention one. I won't mention that you can't touch the quarterback and you'll get a 15-yard penalty, even if you tap him on the shoulder when you run by.
All right, last 40 seconds of the program.
Or they want about
a current athlete that captures your attention. Gary?
Well, this time of the year for me, a golfer, Jordan Spieth.
Oh, yes. Hope he comes back from the Masters.
He didn't have a good day today, though. He shot even par.
All right. Brian?
I'm also going with a golfer. I saw Ricky Fowler today. He had the coolest shoes I've ever seen anyone play. They were pink, yellow, black. They looked awesome. So Ricky Fowler's my guy.
All right. Joe?
Steph Curry, my goodness gracious. How can you not want to watch Steph Curry? 17 points in overtime the other night.
You don't even know what basketball is.
Might be the greatest shooter ever to play.
My thanks to Gary Laubach, Brian Ludroff, Kevin Sheehan from ESPN Radio down in D.C. for joining us earlier. We're going to be back next week with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk, so join us then. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.
Congratulations, 500.
Thank you, guys. Good job.